Chapter 12, Arlene. She stood on his front porch with one hand poised to knock and her heart beating so hard she could hear it in her ears. She hadn't done anything wrong, which was just exactly what she had stopped by to tell him. So why was she so afraid he'd tell her to get lost? Exactly when had this thing taken a wrong turn again? She rapped hard on his front door and immediately wanted to run away. In fact, she'd taken two steps back when he opened the door. Arlene, can I come in for just a minute? It's a mess. Your place? Get serious. You're not the type to have a mess. He opened the door just a little wider to show her the inside of his living room, all stacked with cardboard moving cartons. I haven't quite unpacked yet. Well, Reuben, that ain't a mess. It's not your fault if all your stuff just got here, right? Right, he said, still not sounding too sure of himself. But he stepped back from the doorway and let her in. Can I get you something to drink? I've got orange juice and ginger ale. Ginger ale'd be fine. He went off to get it, and she sat chewing on the edge of her thumbnail, telling herself to stop it, but not stopping. At least he hadn't told her to get lost. When he handed her the cold glass, she said, "You never called me again after that movie." "Did I do something wrong, Reuben? I have no idea." He sat down beside her, perched on the edge of his seat the way he did whenever something made him uncomfortable. Well, see, he wasn't a total stranger. She knew that much about him. I'm not sure I can explain. Know what Trevor told me? He said you told him that it's better not to pretend like you didn't notice, because that doesn't fool you one bit anyway. And you know, when he said that, it made total sense. I thought, shoot, I've been doing it wrong all these years. I'm not going to make that mistake again. So I didn't treat that side of your face like it didn't exist. So you left in a huff, and I ain't heard from you since. I'm sorry. You are? She hadn't thought he would be. She thought somehow she'd come out sorry. The guilty one. That's the way it usually went. Oh, well, that's okay. Just kind of hurt my feelings some of at the time. You're right, he said. I get angry when people pretend they don't notice. And I get angry when I know they do. I'm not sure what I want from people. I think I want them not to jump a mile when they see me. And I'm never going to get that. By that time, she was crying because she felt so bad for him and for herself, truth be told. He didn't have any reaction to her tears, and she wondered if she wanted him to notice or if she wanted him to pretend not to. It was a hard problem. He was right about that. Then he said, "Arlene, I've got a confession to make. These boxes didn't just arrive. They've been here for months. I just can't bring myself to unpack them. I've moved 3 times in the past 4 years. I get so tired of it. Every time I try to unpack, I just get overwhelmed." She stared at him and wiped tears out from under her eyes, sideways and carefully, so she wouldn't smear her mascara. "That is so wonderful." "What is?" "That you told me that. That's the first real thing you ever told me about yourself. And I can totally relate to that. Not with moving, but heck, I feel that way about all kinds of things. I just get overwhelmed, immobile-like." And Reuben said, "Yeah, like that." And they smiled at each other and got embarrassed again. "Maybe it would be easier if you weren't doing it alone. I could help you unpack." "You'd do that?" "Course I would. What are friends for? Just let me use your phone a minute. Tell Trevor where I am." Of course, the first thing Trevor asked was, could he come over and help too? So Arlene put her hand over the phone and asked Reuben. Reuben said, "Of course. But additionally, he got this sweet look on his face, like he really liked Trevor, which Arlene already knew. But every time she saw it, she liked it better than the time before. Trevor got deeply involved in a box of books. He arranged them on Reuben's bookshelf alphabetically, according to the name of the author. This seemed to impress Reuben, and it amazed Arlene. Who knew he didn't get his knack for organization from her side of the family. She stood in Reuben's kitchen, unpacking better than everyday china, handing it to Reuben, who arranged it on the high shelves. She felt so short beside him, like he was standing on a chair, which he was not. A little half Siamese cat with blue eyes came meowing around her feet, and Arlene bent down to pet her. The cat arched her back and purred. "I didn't know you had a cat." "That's Miss Liza." They hadn't said anything for a long time, and after saying that, they fell silent again. The light through the windows went murky with a coming rain. Then she opened the box with the pictures. They were all framed and laid flat, wrapped in newspapers. She unwrapped the top one. It was a photograph of a nice-looking young couple, a handsome young black man, hardly more than a boy, with his arm around a pretty girl. And the man looked a little familiar, almost like Reuben. When she looked up, he was over near the closet, looking back at her, watching her look. "Is this your brother, Reuben?"
"I don't have a brother. That's me."
"Oh." Boy, what a stupid thing to say, Arlene. "Oh." But it was a shock, one she hadn't nearly adjusted to yet. She must have known, somewhere in the back of her mind, that he wasn't born with his face the way it is now. But she'd never thought about it, and certainly never expected to see what he'd look like before, when he was still whole. So she just kept looking, and he just stood by the closet, watching her look. "Who's this pretty lady?"
"Eleanor. She was my fiancé at the time."
"But you never got married?"
"Nope, I've never been married."
Eleanor seemed about two shades darker in skin color than Reuben, smooth, shiny black skin, and her hair all drawn back, looking stylish, like somebody with a world of class, like somebody Arlene never was and never could be, like somebody Reuben really should be with. Arlene couldn't seem to get a bead on which face hurt her more.
"I can't believe how handsome you were."
"Oh, no, I'm sorry, Reuben. Sometimes I say the stupidest things." She looked over at Trevor, preoccupied with his bookshelf, to see if he was taking in any of this very personal stuff. He was not. He was lost in his own little world.
"Wouldn't it be nice if I still looked like that?"
"No." She hadn't known she was going to say that. It just sort of said itself. And the funny thing was, he didn't ask her to explain. He just stuck his head in the closet and went on unpacking. From the other faces behind the movement, Arlene. "Because you know a man like that one in the picture, he would never have shown up in a little hick town like this one in the first place. And if he had, he'd be with that handsome, sophisticated woman, and I just know he would speak down to me." It was real hard to stop staring at that picture. Hard to explain why. It felt like it had a hold of someplace in my gut, and it wouldn't let me go. I mean, it just put a whole lot of things in a whole different light. And then, when I got over that, there was the one of Reuben's parents. They were real good looking too, and they seemed to have that same something, that same thing Eleanor had. And I couldn't even say for sure what it was. But this much I did know. Reuben had it, and I did not. He'd never lose it, and I'd never learn it. Some things start out a certain way and never change. After a while, I set Reuben's parents down and picked up that first picture again. While I stared at it, I thought about my mother and the way she used to shop. We didn't have much money, see, when I was growing up. So she'd buy seconds, different types of damaged goods, rather than an item of clothing that was unflawed but poorer in quality.
"But Mama," I'd complain, "it's got a stain on it." And Mama would say, "Good thing for you it does, little girl, or we'd never been able to afford it." Then I looked up at Reuben again, and he was still standing in the closet. And one more time, I caught him looking back at me. This hard rain started pounding on the roof. She tucked her boy into bed at 10, since it was Saturday and no school the following day. He asked if they could get a cat, and she avoided answering. A few minutes into the 11 o'clock news came the knock. The rain was really coming down. She didn't even realize how much until she opened the door. It fell in sheets behind him, and he stood on her front porch soaking wet. His hair, his clothes saturated, water dripping off his chin. "You're sopping wet. You better get in here." He stepped inside, and she closed the door behind him. "I'll get a towel." She went into her bathroom to get the big cushy one. When she came out with it, he was standing by the couch, dripping water onto the carpet. She sat him down and toweled his closely cropped hair. "Don't take this wrong, but what are you doing here?"
"I got lonely. It was the funniest thing. Something about having you and Trevor in the house with me all day. After you left, the house seemed so empty. I don't want to be alone anymore, Arlene."
"Why didn't you take your umbrella, silly?" She knew he had one. She'd unpacked it herself.
"I couldn't find it."
"I put it in your front closet."
"Oh, I didn't think of that."
"Doesn't everybody keep their umbrella in the closet?"
"No, I don't."
"Where do you keep it?"
"In the umbrella stand."
"What umbrella stand?"
"That tall wicker thing."
"Oh, is that what that was? I thought it was some kind of big skinny planter. I put it on the back porch."
He said, "You seem tense."
"Do I? Last time you were so sure."
"Yeah, well, somebody had to be."
And then, listening to the rain on the roof, she was able to know that she should have known all along. What she had known all along in a very deep spot where she knew better than allow herself to go. Alone, anyway. That Ricky wasn't ever coming back. And even if he ever did, what kind of woman would she be if she opened the door? The handsome young man in the picture came back again, filling up her mind. She would never understand the forces that had brought him from there to here. It took her back to that place again, the one she didn't like, the one where she knew that, by all rights, he was something she should never have been able to afford. From Those Who Knew Trevor Speak. When I got home that night, I called Lou, long distance.
"Wow,"
Lou said. "You're seeing somebody? That's amazing."
"Wish I could say that."
I tried to explain that something felt dishonest about it. It wasn't easy to explain. The only examples I could find involved my shame in being seen by Trevor the following morning. He asked if Trevor seemed to mind, and I had to tell the truth and say no. He pointed out that the only person who felt odd about it was me. I thought that meant I was worried about nothing. I'm used to that. It's a specialty of mine. That's what I wanted him to tell me, I think. That my anxiety was based on nothing, like a shadow with no mask behind it. Then, once he told me so, I thought it would disappear, like a shadow flooded with light. That's not what he said. He said I was the only one who felt dishonest, and I was the only one who knew my intentions. Maybe my intentions were dishonest. I tried to dismiss his comment, but the minute he said it, I felt this great sweep of shame. I admitted to Lou something I'd never said out loud to anyone. Arlene wasn't quite what I'd pictured for myself. She wasn't someone I'd usher into a room on my arm with great pride. "In other words," he said, "you're ashamed of her."
"I didn't say that."
"Sure you did." All these thoughts started going around in my head at once, making it hard to breathe. I realized that this was her worst fear about me, that I looked down on her. Worst fears are always based on a grain of truth. That's what's so bad about them. I wondered if she had a friend she talked to like this. I wondered if she talked about my face and how hard it was to be physically close to me. Lou said, "If you really want somebody else, go find somebody else. You're not doing her any favors." I said, "No, I want her." It surprised us both. I liked the way I felt around her, the way she made me feel, which suddenly seemed so much more real and important than wearing a woman on your arm. Lou told me a story about his most recent relationship, a man who, like most men in his life, held him at arm's length until Lou couldn't take it anymore. I finally issued an ultimatum: get into my life or get out of it. If you want to stop feeling dishonest, Rube, try making an honest woman out of her. When I got off the phone, things began to look clearer.